You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.
I tell him straight up, I think you are keeping tabs on me. I think you are sexually harassing me. And I need all of this to stop immediately or I will not be here any longer. And he just starts sobbing profusely. And I just go to my room. I'm not giving him any more sympathy. I don't want to hear that I have no friends talk anymore. I'm done with the bullshit. I don't want to hear no one really gets me. I'm done hearing about it. And so I'm thinking in my head, okay, tomorrow I am going to leave. And I don't know what the plan will be, but I'm packing as much stuff with me and I will figure it out.
I'm Jamie Beebe.
And I'm Jake Deptula. On today's episode of Strictly Stalking, we're chatting with Daniel, who is being stalked by a man he met on a dating app.
After meeting a guy on Grindr, Daniel didn't see a romantic future with him, but they decided to remain friends.
Daniel was going through a rough patch financially, but his new friend was very generous and offered to help him out.
In fact, when he was looking for a new place to live, his friend offered to let Daniel live with him to help him save money.
After he moved in, Daniel was questioned about his whereabouts, and his friends started drama within Daniel's friend group in an effort to isolate him.
As things escalated, Daniel was being sexually propositioned in person, over text, and through social media by his friend turned stalker.
One night, his stalker exposed himself to Daniel and blasted pornography from his room. When Daniel confronted him, he invited multiple men over and made sure Daniel could hear them having sex.
Daniel left the apartment and sought support, soon realizing he was a victim of stalking and sexual harassment.
Daniel faced his stalker in court during a protection order hearing and soon discovered that his stalker had also crossed sexual boundaries with some of his friends. Daniel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me. I am really excited to share my story with you.
We're glad you're here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you grew up?
So I was born in Miami, Florida. Until the age of two, and my family moved to Northern Michigan, which sounds kind of like a very random choice, but that's actually where my mom grew up, and I couldn't have been luckier to grow up there. It's your typical small Midwest, cute downtown streets right on Lake Michigan. Kind of, you don't lock your doors at night. I really, it sounds corny, I had the quintessential, like, Midwest 1990s childhood.
That's amazing. So your family was really steeped in athletics, right?
That's correct. So my mom's side of the family is actually Romanian American, and gymnastics is a very, very popular sport in Romania, especially at the time when my mom was growing up here in the States. So without question, my grandparents were like, perfect, let's put our daughter in gymnastics, because I guess she had an insane amount of energy and happened to be very, very good at it, all the way up into college where she competed collegiately. And my dad grew up in Queens. I think it was a typical thing, like throwing sticks around the street. So my grandma put him in baseball. He did that all the way through college. And then me and my siblings, we all ended up doing both gymnastics and baseball. And then I just ended up kind of really falling more in love with gymnastics. So I went ahead and took that route. It's very good for motor skills, balance, agility, just in general, like body awareness. And then I kind of caught the bug. I could not get out of the gym. I remember I was 5 years old and I watched the Magnificent Seven win the gold medal at the Olympics in Atlanta. And I was like, oh my God, that is exactly what I'm doing. And no one is telling me otherwise. And then I just stuck with it. During 2016-17, when everything about the Larry Nassar case was surfacing, there was a lot of trepidation from people when I would explain, like, I'm a gymnast and I'm a gymnastics coach. You wouldn't get the best reaction. Sometimes even a little bit of, like, silence and, like, stunned and not know how to react or they don't want to offend me, or they already know they made a weird pause. And then you're sitting there trying to like doctor the conversation. And now I think with just how aggressive the gymnastics community has been pushing for change, I think we all realize that if you're still in this business, it's because you want to make it better and you want to make a different culture.
What made you decide to become a gymnastics coach?
I was working in marketing from 2015 up until 2017. And that's when the Larry Nassar stuff came out. And I was already not really loving a 9-to-5. I just don't think I'm built for it. I have a lot of energy, very talkative, and don't like staring at a computer screen. So nothing was really working in my favor in that area. So I decided, let's reach out to a gym in the area, see what they have available. And it was quite serendipitous. They were like, oh my God, we really need a coach right now. Do you have any experience? And I was like, oh yeah, I coached private lessons all through college for money. And I was a gymnast all the way up until 22. And they were like, yeah, can you come in for an interview? And I walked in for the interview and a coach had called out sick and they just threw me into the class. And I was like, okay, here we go. Let's give it a try. And the rest was history. And I have now been coaching for the last 5 years.
That's great. What was gymnastics coaching like during COVID?
That was truly devastating. For those who don't know the competitive gymnastics season, March is literally when it ramps up. So we had put in all that work in the fall, all through winter, and it was just a slow domino effect. One meet would get canceled, a meet 2 weeks out would get canceled, and all of a sudden we found we were on lockdown. And then we were only open for strictly one-on-one private lessons for about 4 or 5 months. And it wasn't until February of 2021 that we were actually all the way back, like functioning as normal as could be. We had to wear masks and clean every 10 minutes all the equipment, which that's the hardest part because kids want to touch everything. And how do you get them to keep their mask on? How do you tell them, please stop chewing your fingernails? You know what I mean? Or please stop tackling your friend. I know you love them, but we can't do that in here and stuff like that. So it was a struggle. It definitely was a very long year. Needless to say, I've been really happy that this last year I've been able to do what I normally do.
Did that change your finances a lot, not being able to train on a consistent basis?
Oh, completely. So when we first got shut down, there was a huge snag in the Massachusetts. By the way, I was living in Massachusetts at the time. There was a huge snag in the unemployment system. There were a lot of phishing scams where you would get an email that looks like it is a legit unemployment email once you're already like in the system. And so you would put in your information because it looked like an actual form. And I was one of the people who did it, not knowing that there were another 600,000 that had also fallen for this. So it took me about 2 months to get any of that money. Like every week I would file and it would say the same thing. So I finally ended up getting that money, thankfully. But that 2 months, you know, that cell phone bill, that's rent that still needs to be paid. Our landlords were not very friendly about rent during COVID, despite me having all these documents, like asking for help. So it was really, really, really scary. I was beginning to panic. I'm not going to lie to you. I was honestly, on top of worrying about staying alive in a pandemic, I was truly terrified about money.
And it was near this time then that you went on Grindr and met this guy. Do you want to tell us what life was like leading up to that?
So actually, the way Grindr works is it's a little different from Tinder. It is just a grid that just has people's pictures, and you can choose to message them if you would like, or you keep scrolling. So I actually had known of my stalker prior to this Grindr incident. Like many LGBTQ communities, you will know of people that you see on the grid. You've seen them on Instagram. You will have seen them, you know, out at the bars, or you just may even know they're a friend of a friend. So I had exchanged pleasantries with him a few times, but a year or two had gone by since then. So I really kind of was like, hey, I know who you are. Like, let's message, let's chat.
What was it about him that you liked, or that why did you message him?
So at this time, not a lot of people were big on going out in big groups and stuff like that. And I had noticed that, unfortunately, right as summer rolled around, a lot of people I would see on Instagram were going to these like rooftop parties and underground raves. And, you know, I'm still fresh off of not being able to work because of the COVID virus. And I found that really, really infuriating. It was really, really upset to see a lot of my LGBTQ members just being so blatantly disrespectful to the guidelines of COVID. And we had bonded over that, because I was like, I would love to hang out with people, but I don't know who's been anywhere. And I don't know whose circle has exploded from 6 to 600. And he was telling me, oh, I've literally only hung out with my roommate since March, and I'm dying to get out of the house. So I was like, yeah, you know, let's meet up. We'll hang out. I regularly use cannabis and he does too. So those are two things we had in common. And, you know, having not seen people for so long, I was like, oh my God, social interaction, bring it on. I would love it. So that's kind of how it started.
What made you decide that you weren't going to move forward romantically, but you still wanted to remain friends?
So now that I look back at it, I think I wanted to remain friends almost out of pity. I'm sure there's a better word for it, but basically what I kind of noticed was some strange idiosyncrasies about his behavior. Nothing overtly like concerning, but just kind of, it kind of made me like a little light bulb go up. Like, it seemed like he only wanted to talk to hear himself talk. Like, you weren't really having a conversation. Like, you would start to respond, and the minute he wanted to keep talking, you would just get cut off. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And it just kind of seemed like he couldn't read the room. Like, we were hanging out with my roommates the time he came over, and I could tell they were getting a little bit annoyed because he just kept talking over the room, and that made me uncomfortable. But then I'm thinking back to, like, texts that we had, and he would tell me, like, oh, you know, I don't have a lot of friends. I kind of moved here because my mom is here, but I haven't made friends. And I was like, okay, maybe he's just socially awkward. You know, like, he's not unfriendly, but I definitely don't see this going in a romantic direction, which I had told him. And at which point, this is June of 2020, he had said, all right, that's fine. So I thought that, okay, great, like, cool. Like, maybe, I honestly never thought we'd be the best of friends. I just thought, maybe I could be a nice friend to this guy. While he is a little quirky and a little can't read the room, maybe I can be that nice friend who would, like, be that friend for him. Because it didn't seem like he had anyone that he was close with. He would tell me stories of friends he had, but they were all from 5 or 6 years ago.
What was the age gap between you two?
It was about 12 years.
At what point did he realize that you needed financial help and started offering these things to you? And how did it make you feel?
So the times that I had received financial help from him, it was still when I was struggling to get my unemployment. At that point, I was truly, truly terrified of what the outcome would be. I knew I had my family to fall back on if need be. But at that time, you know, I was in the middle of a career I loved in Boston and was still hoping it would come back. I didn't want to give up on the Boston dream. So I was sticking it out, and I decided, you know, if this is someone who is willing to help me and is going to keep me in my apartment and get me just a little bit closer to hopefully the end of COVID-19. And when that person is telling you that they struggled in the past and never had anyone help them, and now that they're doing so well that, you know, it would mean a lot to them. He said it would mean a lot to him to help me. And so at that point, then that kind of, my desperation and the generosity kind of just led to me accepting the help, despite it making me uncomfortable. However, there was a second time when our gym actually, it got shut down twice. And the second time it shut down, we went down to just private lessons, no classes, no nothing. So we were making partial money. However, partial unemployment would only be 6 weeks out. And then I tried to reapply and I got denied. And a bunch of people were getting denied and you had to file petitions. And in the course of waiting for my petition, that was like a 4 week period. And so at that point, I actually was venting and having a meltdown and in a total place of weakness. I got an email and it had a wire transfer. And I was like, whoa, I didn't ask for this. I don't know what to do. And he's like, don't worry about it. And then just like didn't reply for the rest of the day, despite me being like, are you sure? When do you want me to pay you back? We never had conversations about payment. Never. Anytime I'd bring up paying him back, it was always whenever you're ready. And I never quite knew what that meant. But I thought, okay, this is someone who knows I'm just good for my word. What I am realizing right now is just how transactional that help was. Because the first time he helped me out, I felt very obligated to hang out with him. And he, after he sent me money the first time, is when I started getting a lot of repetitive texts. So I felt bad. I'm like, oh my God, I'm totally blowing this friend off. Like, let me respond. Let's go grab lunch, you know? And still kind of trying to figure out his personality, not really sure what it is. Then, you know, that kind of tapers off and I'm working again. So I'm doing fine. And then it happens again. And then he sends me money without asking. And now I feel like that was super transactional. Cause then that means he still has me around to hang out with.
What were the incidents that led up to you needing a place to live?
So from 2020 into 2021, I was staying in an apartment. Loved my roommates. It was so much fun. And unfortunately, COVID-19 kind of decimated everyone's financial standings. And a lot of them were blessed enough to be from towns maybe 2 hours away from the area. So they all just packed up and moved home. And they all found separate sublets. But what wasn't really discussed is that I wasn't going to get to meet them first. I was visiting home and I came back and now three new people are living with me. I knew they were moving in, obviously, but I had never met them before. And so we're still dealing with, I'm fighting partial unemployment every once in a while as this is happening. And I am kind of fronting the bills and waiting way too long to get utility bills from all my roommates back. They're taking forever. I don't know them, so I'm not really comfortable, you know, asking them, helping them, like, whatever. And so we're leading into June of 2021. And I had not been doing well financially. I am just ending my lease, but I can't find an apartment in time. Couldn't get a sublet in time because I just didn't have the money to make a deposit on a 3-month sublet. So that's what kind of led to him inviting me to live with them.
Once he invited you to move in, like, what was that situation like?
So during this process, I had just started working full time again at the gym. We had a lot of work to do. It was literally at the exact same time. So I had moved all my stuff out because that was our move-in date, was May 31st. We had to be out of the apartment. So I packed up all my stuff and I had a really close friend who I was lucky enough to let me put my stuff in storage. So there was about a 2-week period between me moving out of the apartment and me moving in with my stalker. And during that 2-week period was when we had those text discussions about, oh, you should move in. Like, it'll really help you out. And if you like it, you can just stay. And then I'll just have you, like, sign a lease. Because basically at that time, the rooms were room to room at his apartment. And he had just been, it was 2-bedroom, and he had just been living in it by himself because he had more than enough finances to cover both rooms. There would be days leading up to me moving in where I really couldn't predict my work schedule. So I changed around the move-in date a couple times, and I could tell he was getting increasingly more frustrated, which I just chalked up to, yeah, well, he wants to know because it's his apartment. I understand. But the thing that seemed weird to me is how impatient and not understanding he was of our schedule, despite this also being the person that like knew how excited I was to start working full time and be back like doing what I love to do. So I was expecting an answer to be like, oh, no problem. Whenever you're ready, like, that's fine. I know you're having a crazy work week. So it being anything but that is what started to feel strange. And then once I moved in is when the keeping tabs on me began, wanting to know my whereabouts, wanting to hang out all the time, stuff like that.
In what ways was he trying to keep tabs on you?
He would look at my location on Snapchat map, and I didn't take it as something disturbing at first because I would just get a random text like, oh, you're at Assembly Mall. Love it there. And I'd be like, oh, yes. Like, haha, how'd you know? He's like, oh, I just saw it on Snapchat. And I'm like, oh, okay, no big deal. Thinking I had made like a story. And I got home and I'm like, no, there's nothing on my story that I was at the mall. That's odd. And then I'm like, whatever, not going to think anything of it. And then a week later, I am out on a date. And he asked me before my date, he's like, oh, are you coming home after your date? And I was like, oh, I don't know why. He's like, well, I thought we'd like smoke and hang out. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't know. Like, if I happen to be home, yeah, maybe. And he's like, well, you wouldn't come home after a first date. And that felt weird to me because he is a very openly sexual person. Like, I had known about, he had a Twitter that was X-rated. And, you know, everyone can do whatever they want. So I just thought it was weird for someone who has, you know, a Twitter for their personal explicit pictures. I was like, well, why are you so concerned if I were to go and have sexual relations with someone on a first date? That seems odd. So I'm out on the date, and then I go with my date to his apartment, which is about like a 15-minute drive from where we're on our date. And he texts me, he's like, yeah, so I guess you're really not coming home. And that is kind of what had me thinking, did he track me the whole way to my date and to a second location? Because how would you even know where we were for dinner? This could be the dinner and we could have just gotten there. We could have stopped for drinks. How would you know unless you legitimately tracked me? So that was strange. And that was when I started getting uncomfortable. And then almost instantly is when the sexual propositioning and the sexual harassment began.
Did you confront him about knowing your whereabouts, or did you change your location settings at all?
All I did was I turned off the location on Snapchat map. I didn't want to make too big of a deal out of it. Remember, I am still feeling very ingratiated to my stalker because at this point they've done so much for me and they've let me have a place to live. So I'm like, I don't know what to do. I guess I'm just gonna, you know, hope that that's just like maybe him. Again, I'm giving him so many excuses in my head at the time, knowing he doesn't have a lot of friends. He's very lonely. So I'm like, maybe he doesn't have friendship skills. And in my head, I'm almost thinking, like, maybe he is just awkward. And that's just, he doesn't know how to have a regular conversation. I'm just trying to, you know, almost convince myself that everything's fine.
At what point did things escalate into sexual harassment?
About the third date I had with this guy, I brought him back to the apartment. And we ended up hooking up in my bed. And I had him leave. I was like, good night, I'll text you later. And I hear sobbing from my stalker's room. And I don't know what it is. I go over there and I'm like, hey, are you okay? And he's like, why? I just don't know, why not me? Like, why can't it be me? But I can tell that he has been drinking. So I'm thinking he's being an emotional drunk. This is weird. And then I'm like, I'm so sorry. I thought we talked about this. Like, I'm not interested in you in that way. And I don't want to hurt your feelings. And I am so sorry you feel this way. I would not move into your apartment if I knew this was going to make you upset. And he's like, no, it's fine. It's just something I have to get over. I'm sorry. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's what all this was about. I'm like, maybe the watch me on Snapchat, he was getting a little jealous because I'm on a date with this guy. And maybe now he just had to get it off his chest to me and we're going to work it out. Nope. Sometime in the night, I put a picture on my Instagram story and I was in some like tighter athletic shorts. It was a gymnastics video. And not to be too graphic, but I guess in this video, you could see parts of my body moving around because I am flipping at 500 G's per second. And he responded with like, oh, I'm trying to get a closer look at what's in there. And then it turned into, can I just see it? Like, I'll get over this if I can just see it. You know, I really want to see it. Like, it's just something I can't get over. These would all be in text and it would come through on a text message. It would come through on a Twitter DM. It would come through on a story reaction, just like relentless. And then saying, I'm sorry, you know, I can't help it. And at some point it had come clear to me that he had seen my explicit images. During COVID-19, I had started an OnlyFans because of my financial situation. And shortly after I had resolved my financial situation with the unemployment office and getting that relief, I just quickly stopped using it for no other reason other than I didn't need it anymore. And it wasn't something that I really wanted to become like a full-time project. I was very careful about what I was posting. Nothing with face, anything like that. But I did have a Instagram that I promoted it on, but only through the close friends story, which was strictly the LGBT friends that I had. Because I knew no one's going to judge. They're going to be like, yeah, live your best life, you know, do what you got to do. And so that's when I knew that's how he knows, because the jargon would turn from, you know, I want to see it, to it's my favorite. And I'm like, how would my naked pictures be your favorite if you haven't seen them, despite you asking all you want to do is just see them? And this happened over a myriad of weeks, and it would taper down at times, mainly because I would say it makes me uncomfortable. And I would often have to threaten to have him show me like his OnlyFans if he subscribed to me. And he would tell me, No, I'm not. Someone just showed me once before, which unfortunately I did take that as face value because people do share pictures in the community all the time.
Before moving in with him, or even right after you moved in with him, did you realize that he had these feelings for you?
Back in, I would say around November of 2020, you know, we had been hanging out as friends occasionally. He had told me that he had bought me Christmas presents, which that made me a little uncomfortable just because I didn't see him as that close of a friend. Not as close as like the friends I, you know, do actual family, like friends and family holiday with, stuff like that, which I thought was strange. And what interestingly happened at the time was I was actually dating someone and they had gotten me a Kacey Musgraves hoodie for my birthday / Christmas. And I was so excited. So I took a screenshot because he wanted to show me right away because he like didn't want to wait. So he's like, look what you're getting on your birthday. And I like took a screenshot of the text with like the picture on it. And I tweeted it out. And then a day later, I get a text from my stalker and he had screenshotted my tweet and he wrote under it, oh, ... That sucks. And I respond, oh, what's wrong? He's like, well, I actually happened to have gotten you that hoodie. Which I'm like, that post has been up for at least a day. Like, did you get me that hoodie before you found out or after? Was like my question now. But at the time, he was like, yeah, I got you that and I got you a couple things from the smoke shop. And I was like, okay, thank you. And he's like, I just have to say, I'm like working on like these feelings I have for you. That's why I got you Christmas gifts. And, you know, I responded, I was like, I kind of figured that might have been the case. And I'm glad you're bringing this up because I would like us to remain friends. I really think that that's what's best for us. And he's like, okay, I understand. I'm just going to need like a little bit of space, which honestly at the time was a little relieving because I was getting very uncomfortable with the constant text and wanting to hang out. And then that nagging obligation combined with ultimately, you know, kind of feeling like, I don't think this guy's ever going to give up on wanting to hang out if I don't text back, but not really thinking it's anything more than just a clingy friend.
Once you set that boundary into place, when did you hear from him again?
I heard from him just randomly responding to something on my Instagram story. I really can't remember what it was, but it was harmless. It was just like a conversation starter. And knowing that he had taken space from, you know, our friendship, because as far as I was understood, he needed time to work through not having feelings for me. And I was still with this boyfriend at the time. And he had said something along the lines of like, oh, I see you're still dating that guy. And I was like, yeah, I'm still dating that guy. He's like, oh, how's it going? I'm like, it's going well. And he's like, yeah, I see your boyfriend's really into video games. And I was like, yeah, he is. He's like, he plays the same game I do. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And mind you, at this time, I was in a semi-committed relationship, but where we were only sleeping with each other, but there was no real title on it. It was somewhat open, I guess you could say, like we weren't fully exclusive, but leading, like headed there. And so my, I guess you could call him boyfriend, he still had Grindr at the time, which I was fine with because we weren't totally exclusive. It was something where like we would have a conversation if we wanted to go like hook up with someone else, because neither of us were ready to be in a committed relationship, but the feelings were really strong. So we kind of have semi-boundaries. And he's like, oh, my stalker had messaged him on Grindr, maybe like an hour after I had messaged him on Instagram. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so. He says you guys play the same game. And Jordan's like, yeah, but he keeps flirting with me pretty heavy. And I'm just not interested. And I was like, oh, no, like, I'm defending him. I'm like, no, he's just really awkward. Like, you know, I'm, again, thinking this is just the awkward kid that I want to defend and tell people, like, no, he's just doesn't really know how to carry himself in like a social situation. And then he started really crossing the boundaries. And then my boyfriend at the time was expressing discomfort in that. And then it was about a month and a half later that I broke up with my boyfriend. And then he was right back in the picture. But, you know, up until this point, this is like May, right, like a month before moving in. And I'm still just thinking he's just a little awkward and a little quirky.
Hey guys, Jake and I love listening to true crime podcasts, like all the time. And we have an incredible one that we must tell you about called Missing. I'm telling you, I can't get enough of it, and I binge it while I'm cleaning the house, hiking with my dog, and always when I'm traveling.
Missing covers a wide range of missing person cases and also interviews with expert guests. There's a lot of episodes to binge. I'm a huge fan of the show, and I highly recommend it to all of our listeners.
Oh, that's right. In fact, we listened to Missing on our way back from CrimeCon last weekend. We heard the case of Chance Engelbert, who went missing in 2019 from Tarrytown, Nebraska. He had an argument with some family members and took a walk to cool down, but then he was never seen again. It's absolutely crazy that someone can just walk off and then poof, they're gone, just like that. And in this case, everything is really mysterious.
You know, I think when you go missing like that, we really need to consider foul play.
Oh, for sure. Another one I really like listening to is the story of Shanna Boito. She went missing in 2016 when she and her boyfriend were driving. They got in a fight, and he says that she got out of the car and ran into the woods by the highway, and she was never heard from again.
And she left without her purse, doesn't have a cell phone, and doesn't know anyone in the area she went missing. And I'm sure everyone is thinking it was likely the boyfriend, especially because there was talk of domestic violence. But right now, foul play is not suspected in the case. Definitely take a listen and see what you think happened to Shanna.
They have so many episodes, there's one for everyone. What I like is that the show helps raise awareness, they elicit tips, and they also put pressure on police to keep searching. Tim, Lance, and Jen are your weekly dose of harrowing stories and hopeful findings that you don't want to miss.
you can't go wrong with adding Missing to your rotation. It's incredibly interesting, and there's never a dull episode.
Just search for Missing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you were getting these texts daily and you were going through this and you were getting harassed, when you got home, like, what were those interactions like with him? Was there any, you know, confrontations? Was there any sort of discomfort between you two?
Yes. If I had come home at a time that he didn't deem acceptable or too late, I would get kind of berated and be like, well, I was really hoping to hang out and smoke. And yeah, I can be a little feisty, and I'm a planner, so I would respond with, I didn't know that you wanted to do that. Like, had I known, yeah, sure, maybe I would have come home earlier. There would be things like, well, when I asked you to move in, I really kind of expected, like, you to want to, like, hang out. Like, I don't have a lot of friends, and I was, like, hoping to, like, live with a best friend. And, you know, things to make me feel guilty. And then very passive-aggressive. Anything I would say, he would respond like it was the dumbest thing he ever heard. And then, like, laugh about it. Very catty, sometimes even mean, basically correcting every single thing I say.
When did you decide that enough was enough and you really just needed to get away from him?
So, coincidentally, at the time, we were just discussing Larry Nassar. And in the summer of 2021, towards the end, August, September, they were starting FBI hearings to go into what wasn't handled correctly with the Larry Nassar case. And I have a very close connection with the Larry Nassar case, being from the state of Michigan, knowing so many gymnasts who went to see him. So, you know, it brought up a lot of 2017's bad memories. And I started getting angry. Not just at what he was doing, but the fact that I made a whole career change to fight grooming and to fight this culture of power dynamics. And I was letting someone groom me completely. And I had let it just happen without even realizing it. Gymnasts, when I were growing up, we were actually forced to respect our coaches. There was no other option. And your feelings were kind of null and void from the minute you stepped in that gym to the moment you left. And, you know, there are really no clear signs when you're in it, I feel like, especially when it is so mirrored to what you grew up. I was expected to just listen to my coaches from the second I walked in the gym to the second I left, because I knew that was going to lead me to what I wanted. It was that tangible, or that, I like to use the metaphor, a steak on a treadmill with a dog running after it, but it's like to catch it, just to keep it going. So they always held glory in being a champion and making it to the Olympics over our head. And so we would just kind of internalize everything they were saying as, no, they're making us better. They're helping us. This isn't mental abuse. It can't be.
Do you believe that your stalker knew that part of your conditioning going into this based on your background and use that to manipulate you?
Completely. I think he could tell very, very quickly on that because of my gymnastics background, I want to sweep everything under the rug as quickly as I can, because conflict and expressing how you feel, if they retaliate, I panic. You know, I don't know how to keep sticking up for myself. So if I do express discomfort and there's a retaliation, I just say, okay, I'm sorry for bringing it up. Like, that's kind of how I operate, because that was what's been conditioned into me since, you know, 11, 12 years old.
When did you hit that breaking point and then you realized, okay, you really just need to escape this toxic situation?
So it was leading into October of 2021. And I had been avoiding the house as much as possible. But then it would get worse and worse. The longer I stayed away, the more passive aggressive the behavior would be. And mind you, at this point, the sexual harassment had escalated to, there would be nights where we're sitting on the couch and we're watching a movie And again, I'm taking any peaceful moment, just try that would almost take me out of it. Any kind of calm moment that we're living together, I'm like, okay, maybe finally this is it. And I would like see something funny on the TV and I would go to Trent and be like, isn't that funny? And I'd notice him that he's like slowly exposing himself to me, but kind of in a way to make it not look like he's meaning to, if that makes sense. But it's quite obvious, because then when I would turn away, I could see like the hand motions and the movements and like that happening. And then it would go from that to, I had to walk past his room to get to the kitchen. So he would leave his door unlocked and he would be pleasuring himself and then be like, oh my God, I didn't see you. But yet not go rush to shut the door, leave it up to me to shut it, which I thought, like, I've never walked in on someone or walked near that ever happening. So who am I to say that that was weird? I mean, I don't know. It wasn't until one final night I show up home late and he's waiting on the porch for me, which he did this, mind you, multiple times. A lot of times waiting on the porch, crying, telling me I'm a terrible friend, telling me that he has actually texted my friends that day and he had said how upset he was. So I get in an argument with him and I'm finally getting angry. I tell him straight up, I think you are keeping tabs on me. I think you are sexually harassing me. And I need all of this to stop immediately or I will not be here any longer. And he just starts sobbing profusely. And I just go to my room. I'm not giving him any more sympathy. I don't want to hear that I have no friends talk anymore. I'm done with the bullshit. I don't want to hear no one really gets me. I'm done hearing about it. And so I'm thinking in my head, okay, tomorrow I am going to leave. And I don't know what the plan will be, but I'm packing as much stuff with me and I will figure it out. So it's like 11 o'clock at this point, and I fall asleep for about 2 hours. And I wake up to what at first I thought was the TV being loud. So I get out of my room and I'm getting pretty pissed. So I'm stomping down there because, again, I'm like, another retaliation. Another form of the sexual harassment multiple times would have been he would play pornography very loud. So I would hear it through my wall of my room. So then I'm getting pissed. I'm like, this is pornography. He's listening to pornography again. Then I feel the echoes of voices. That's when I know, though, there are two people in there. And I'm hearing furniture move. I'm hearing walls bang. I'm hearing, obviously, the sounds of two people engaging in intercourse. And so I walk back to my room, almost actually, honestly, relieved. I kind of thought, oh, maybe he, like, in this, maybe me yelling at him and exploding at him, maybe he will finally go after someone else and go date someone else. And that was another thing. While we were living together, he no longer had the Grindr app. And whenever he would talk about being lonely, I'm like, well, go on a date with someone. And I always had an excuse. So I'm like, oh, perfect. Maybe he downloaded it and he just needed, you know, to have a fun night with someone to shake it off. I'm like, great. That'll make leaving in the morning so much easier. Because at this point, I still had decided, like, I'm done. Like, I just thought that this would mean they're just going to leave me alone and I can just exit. I was so naive to think I could do so. So I try to fall back asleep and then I hear footsteps leave out the door. So I'm like, okay, that guy left. Mind you, this is an old Victorian home. So everything is very loud, yet the walls are beautifully thin, which totally sucks. Then I hear the door open again. And then I hear it's another person. Then you hear the door open after that person and hear another person. So now there's three people in there and they continue to do what they're doing until about 5 a.m. where I finally text him. I'm like, you need to turn that down. And then all he did was just switch to playing Xbox Live extremely loud with his stereo speakers on and put them right by my door where the door was shaking. So at that point, it's 6 a.m. I have no patience left. I grab as many bags as I can carry with me and I walk out my door and I go straight to the train and I went to a friend's house. And it wasn't until that point that I got off the train and I'm like, oh, I have to explain to my friend why I am here with all these bags. And no lie is going to work because this is so just, I need to tell, I just need to come clean. And I called her on the way. She was like a 10-minute walk. I called her. I told her. She was extremely disturbed as well. They were texting back and forth. She would be like kind of disturbed by the things that he would say. But at the time, she never told me, like when he would complain about me as a roommate, mainly because she would just tell them that's between you guys. It wasn't until he instigated a fight between us that once I called her, it all clicked with her. It made total sense with her. I think that was the very first time I even admitted out loud what I was the victim of. And I got to her house and she got us right to work. We put Rain on the phone. I talked to someone from Rain. From there, I got a counselor and legal aid from Rain and a legal team, all of which were willing to help me and escort me into the courthouse.
Tell us what Rain is.
It is the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network. They're a 24/7 free hotline. I had heard of them before just because of being a fan of true crime podcasts. I know of the great work that Rain does. And I decided that this was the time I need to ask for help. And I'm done internally gaslighting myself. And I'm going to shed whatever doubts I have in my mind.
Once you reached out to Rain, what were those next steps that they helped you out with?
I obviously asked about which direction to take. Do I make a police report? Is this a domestic issue? Or is this just like a TPO, like temporary protection order kind of situation? And they really said it was up to me to pick which routes I wanted to go. They obviously said making a police report and pressing charges would mean a lot more work. It would maybe even involve a trial. And do you want to put yourself through that? Which I didn't. I didn't. All I wanted was it just to go away. And my biggest concern was just to get out of the apartment. So that's when we decided on a TPO. We thought that would be the best option. And they also, with my legal team, one thing they had me do was have a police escort come with me. They recommended I do that. And that was a service they provide through the local police department. And I think they even do it in almost like every city in Boston, which is like an awesome thing. They're really good about that, I've learned. When talking to Rain, they're like, well, the good thing for you is the courts typically always go in favor of those who file.
So you were able to get this temporary restraining order. What happened after that?
So we did a 10-day order. And what that allowed me to do was have 10 days to go into the apartment and retrieve the rest of my belongings. One thing of note that I did have the police make note of is when I did go back into my room, there was a giant black t-shirt that smelled horrific, like the worst BO I've ever smelled. And it was a black t-shirt with skull and crossbones just placed on my bed. Now, this is after he had been served and had to leave. And the one thing that Rain also said to me, though, is for the 10-day hearing, you don't want to bring up too many things. You want it to be as specific as possible, because then they said it could look like I'm gilding the lily in a way, which that sucks that it has to be that way, because when you're so mad, you want to say every single thing that has come to mind. Like, when I filled out my affidavit, I think I had 5 scrap sheets of paper. I was so angry, and I was so sick of it. I was just saying every single thing that I could remember. But also within that 10-day hearing, he tried to petition it and do an emergency hearing, which was honestly, that was the scariest part of the 10-day process. I was in the middle of work, and I got a phone call. And they were like, your stalker is actually on Zoom with the court right now, and he would like to petition your hearing. And your mind goes blank. Like, I could like cry, but like, I remember feeling like, you've got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. Like, all I want is this to be over. I'm not asking anything from him, just to let me leave. And he was petitioning it. What I eventually found out was he was petitioning it so he could go in and retrieve some medication that he would need. And I don't know where this Daniel came from, because I am so not a yeller, and I'm so not like, I need this and I need this and you're going to do this. Especially with my gymnastics background, very docile, very like passive. I said, the only way he is going in there is if he has a police escort and he's leaving immediately. And I want to know the second you guys get there, and I want to know the second you guys are leaving. And they did. They were able to tell me, well, I had to call to the police department, but then they would read the reports that yes, they went and yes, he left. So at the 10-day hearing, I had told the judge, I do not want him to contact me anymore, and he can remain on the property. I just want this over.
Where does your case stand now after all of that?
So what we are at now is I did not ask to extend the TPO. I just asked that he leave me alone and that he not speak to me again. And it has worked in terms of him not reaching out to me. That has stopped. But the bullying of me online has not stopped. And the fake accusations and trashing my name has not stopped.
What is he doing online to harass you?
He's asking for money and asking for help, despite the fact that he's extremely financially well off, saying that a friend filed a bogus harassment against him and I put him in financial ruin. Other posts would be like, got lied to about my best friend, would really like need some words of encouragement, or like the ultimate betrayal. I can't believe I'm in court right now. Stuff like that, which I knew was going to happen. I just didn't think it would continue for months after. And he even went as far as to make a fake GoFundMe page, stating that him and I were partners for over 5 years and that we were being displaced from our home and we're looking to move into a new forever home. And he was asking for $100,000 in assistance. And it had my name and my number and his name and his number. And I did have to report that to the police, but all that happened was GoFundMe took it down.
What would you like to see happen to him?
I would like to say I want him to get help, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to repeat his actions. I think this is a pattern, knowing that he's done it to friends of mine in the past. In a much less degree, I like to think, though, that I might have been part of his escalation process. And that is truly what made me want to get out as well, thinking that it could get worse and his patterns could get more severe. And I would not honestly be surprised if I found out that he did something much, much, much worse.
Do you feel that after sharing this story with other ones of your friends and maybe even, you know, friends of friends, that they may come forward and talk about what he's done to them?
I would like them to think that this podcast would be a perfectly safe space to do that. What I would really like to see is any LGBTQ member of the community speak out more about this, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is there are a large and large amount of crimes against people of the LGBTQ community from outside the community. But I think what often doesn't get its day under the sun in terms of like actual attention and notoriety is the vast amount of crimes committed from within the community. People, you know, taking advantage of being of that same minority group and that same kind of othered out crowd and kind of using that as a disguise.
What made you decide to come forward, especially with him still cyber stalking and harassing you online?
Because I'm not afraid of him anymore. I made him small and I made myself bigger.
What type of advice do you have for somebody in the same situation?
I think it is always good to give someone the benefit of the doubt, but you got to stop making excuses for someone's behavior when it's kept repeating and making you further and further unsure of what their true intentions are. I think what you need to start doing is listen to your gut reaction. If your gut is saying something's uncomfortable, you know what resolution you want for yourself out of that uncomfortable situation. And if it keeps repeating and the pattern keeps moving, you got to get out. And I would also like to say, you're never wrong for knowing how you deserve to be treated. You should never invalidate that for yourself. If you are feeling truly uncomfortable, you can't just listen to what, oh, well, my friends might think I'm overreacting. Or, oh, what if someone calls me a bitch because I called someone out on sexual harassing comments? Or, oh, what if like I'm like, what if they say I'm just asking for it? Like, maybe I want the attention. They can think all those things and they can say all those things. But at the end of the day, the reality stays the same. And the only one who needs to know the reality at the end of the day is yourself and whoever's going to help you out of it.
It's amazing advice, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you guys. I'm really happy that I got to share my story. And I've been a huge fan of your podcast. So I was thrilled that you gave me the opportunity to use my story as part of what you guys are pushing forward with your advocacy for victims of stalking.
Thank you so much, Daniel.
Thank you.
If anyone out there is in need of help or is a victim of stalking, please reach out. You can find a list of resources on our Instagram at Strictly Stalking Pod.
If you'd like to share your story with us on Strictly Stalking, you can reach us at strictlystalkingpod@gmail.com. That's strictlystalkingpod@gmail.com.
As a listener of Strictly Stalking, please leave a review and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, CastBox, or wherever you listen.
I'm Jake Deptula.
And I'm Jamie Beebe. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Strictly Stalking.